Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. Tonight we're talking to writer, journalist, Catherine Yeske Taylor. And we're talking about her new book, She's a Badass, Women in Rock Shaping Feminism. Catherine, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book. I enjoyed this a lot.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a great way to start off on Monday morning.
So how did you come up with this idea? Because I think it's really interesting about talking to rock musicians who happen to be women about feminism. And I found the various discussions about that really, really, really fascinating.
Yeah, well, I've been a music journalist for more than 30 years now. And I had a literary agent approach me who'd been reading my articles and said, I think you'd be a really good candidate to become an author. Can I represent you? And we'll try to get you a book deal. And we started brainstorming ideas. And I had recently interviewed Danita Sparks of the band L7.
Yeah.
And he really liked that article. And he just said, well, you know, that was really interesting when you talked to her about feminism. Why don't you do a book about that? And as soon as he said it, I thought, oh yeah, that's the one. I can write a book about that because I certainly have heard a lot of stories from women over the years as I've interviewed them, and I have stories of my own, which I ended up putting in the introduction about what it's like to be a woman in such a male-dominated business. And so I can't take credit for the idea, but I did take his good idea and run with it.
Now you stuck with only 20 different rockers. Did you want to add more, and that was just a limit that you put on yourself to include in the book?
I did want to add more. I did go back and forth with the publisher about what the number should be. At a certain point, we just arrived at 20 because the book should be about 80,000 words, standard. And
don't you hate editors?
<It's> like, well, you know, the printing costs are a factor in this, you know, in a way that people don't really realize. You know, you add another 10,000 words, that's another, you know, you have to make the book bigger and the binding costs are bigger. And bookstores don't want to carry books that are a non-standard size.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know this.
Yeah,
I know
this
story.
I was kind of limited to 20 because I realized after writing a couple of chapters that they were averaging about 4,000 words each. And so that was going to be 20.
Now, were there any interviews that you couldn't get that you really wanted?
I really, 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 really tried hard to get Tracy Chapman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really, really tried. And
but her history, hasn't she been really reticent to talk to people?
Yeah, and I knew it was a long shot, but I had to try. And her manager was really lovely. He just kept coming back and saying, you know, I'll let you know, I'll let you know, I'll let you know. And then at a certain point, I had to move on because my deadline was coming up. But I did try very hard to get her. I do have some people pointing out, you know, why didn't you get Debbie Harry of Blondie? Why didn't you get Chrissy Hynde of Pretenders? Well, the reason is they already have their own books.
Yep.
And I felt like someone already has their own book, they've already had a chance to speak their mind. And so I wanted to get different people for this.
Were there any interviews that really surprised you?
I guess you could say surprised me in kind of a bad way.
Okay.
I interviewed Amy Ray for this.
Yep.
And, you know, I started off my career as a teenager in Atlanta. And Amy Ray and Emily Saliers of the Indigo Girls were among the first people, you know, major artists to grant me an interview because that's where they're from, too. And over the years, they've always been really lovely to me, and I've interviewed them many times. But this was the first time that I really got to dig very deep into Amy's history. And
that's a weird interview.
Yeah, I was really dismayed at how unhappy she was behind the scenes. I kind of thought when I was a teenager watching them, you know, on MTV and all this, you know, winning a Grammy Award and everything, like they seem to have it made. And so then to talk to someone who was struggling so much behind the scenes, because the band was the first openly gay, one of the first openly gay bands, and they took so much grief for that it actually made her quite self-loathing. And so it was difficult to hear, you know, someone I had looked up to as a teenager as being successful from my town as being really in a bad place at that same time.
It was interesting reading that interview because obviously that comes off in the interview too. And I was surprised too because I grew up with the Indigo Girls too. And I thought there'd be a little bit more joy in there.
Yeah, I do too. And you know, every other interview I've done with them,
but you know, that's like asking somebody to smile. You know, they are who they are, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, she is in a better place now. I'm happy to say. I mean, it's like a happy ending. You know, she's married, has a kid. Their career, you know, is continuing to do really well. But it was just a difficult one. That was a hard one for me personally.
Obviously, with all interviews in this book, and it covers a wide range of styles of music too. Everybody had experienced grotesque examples of sexism, in both as a musician versus their management or the audience, or just the music business in general, and some of it really shocking still. There's a great quote that you use in the book from Bjork. Everything that a guy says once, you have to say five times. And that is so frustrating. And the amazing thing is that's still going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I ordered this book from oldest to youngest. It starts off with people like Susie Quattro and Ann Wilson and Gina Schock, you know, people in their 70s and late 60s. And then I go all the way down to women in their early 30s. And I did that on purpose so that people could see, you know, some things have gotten better. I don't think a guy can really just grab a woman and basically manhandle her and get away with it anymore.
No.
But some things are really stubbornly still a problem. You know, there are many stories of a woman having a show, walking into the music venue and having the sound guy or, you know, someone else at the venue act like she doesn't know how her own equipment works. I mean, that continues to happen. And I hear that from my friends who are my female friends who are musicians still. Oh, you know, can I plug in that amp for you, little lady?
That kind of
happens a lot.
That's like fingernails on a chalkboard when I read or hear stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was interesting to hear, you know, like, so there are a couple of things that just seem to be a stubborn problem. And I'm, you know, even after writing this book, I'm not sure I can put a finger on why that is. Like, why are these things still, a couple of things still such a ingrained problem?
I think you might have noticed that
every woman, you know, without my prompting them, I should add, also had a lot of stories of men who helped them. So they were all very careful to say, like, I'm not a man basher. I don't hate men. I just hate this certain kind of man who sometimes pops up. And so they all were very careful to try to balance that out, you know, and say good stories as well.
One of the things that fascinated me is how many of the artists resisted the label of feminism and then go on making statements that seemed like they were feminist statements, but they would be vocal, especially the older rockers, I think. They were vocal about the fact that, no, I don't accept that label feminist.
Yeah, I was actually surprised about that because when I wrote this book proposal, I already had the title in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because you have to have something when you chart it out to potential publishers. And when I signed on with Backbeat, they liked the title, so I kept it. And I just thought that a book that was subtitled Women in Rock Shaping Feminism would mean that every woman that I approached to be in it would be a feminist. And I quickly found that that's not true. There's a sizable contingent of women in this book who do not want that label applied to them in any way, shape, or form.
Do you have an explanation for that? It's almost as if they've never read, is it they haven't read modern contemporary feminist thought?
I think it's because a lot of them associate that word with a movement that's really strident and is kind of man-hating sometimes. And they don't want to be associated with that. And then other women just don't want there are a couple of women like Susie Quattro, like Lydia Lunch, who just don't want any label applied to them whatsoever.
Okay, and that's fair. That's fair.
And, you know, just it's more of like an artistic statement, I think. You know, they just want to be outside, the outsider, you know, in every way. That's part of who they are as an artist. So I think it's those two things. But I will say, I you know, at first when they started telling me these things, I was panicking because I'm thinking, I can't use this now. You mm-hmm. know, this book is about feminism. But as I continued to talk to them, I realized, you know, they may not want that label applied to them, but they are still feminists.
That's
in
right.
their actions and in the effect that they are having, you know, showing that women can do this job as well as a man and refusing to back down when they kind of encounter these obstacles. So I kept them in there because, I would argue that whether they accept that particular label or not, they are still feminists.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Tonight, we're talking with writer and journalist Catherine Yeske Taylor, and we're talking about her new book. It's great. She's a Badass. Great title. Woman in Rock Shaping Feminism. Catherine, can we just talk about individual artists? I'm just going to do an arbitrary list because of artists that I really enjoy. Susie Quattro starts the book. I got to see Susie Quattro play the warm-up act for Alice Cooper. I think it was back in the... I forget when.
Wow.
It was. Yeah, I'm that old. I'm that old, Catherine. And what I got to see was a first example, which I thought was sort of sexist. You know, she came out, she played her heart out, and the audience wasn't having it. And I think it's obviously Alice Cooper. Maybe that wasn't a great matchup. I mean, everybody was waiting for the, you know, Welcome to My Nightmare tour or whatever it was. But there was a lot of sexism expressed from the audience to the artist. How many artists did you find that talked about that, about them being the lead or the front person for the band, that the audience sometimes didn't accept them?
Oh, quite a bit. I mean, there is Susie Quattro, like you mentioned, you know, Ann Wilson. There's an example in the book about how she, you know, when Heart wasn't even, they didn't even have that name yet, but the band was formed and they played a show in, I think it was Montana. You know, and some of the audience members came up and started suggesting to her, you know,
oh, right.
what she could do to make herself more physically appealing.
Oh,
you know, this kind of story comes up over and over again. And it mostly seems to have to do with how attractive an audience finds the woman, or if she is attractive, they want her to go even farther and, you know, make herself sexy, you know. And it's like the music itself is kind of lost in the shuffle there. It's more visual based than it is sonically based for female artists, it seems, even now. Like, they have to meet a certain bar
yep.
of attractiveness for people to even want to hear the music, it seems.
One of the great things, and I loved reading about Susie Quattro, is that she has a female penalty card.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, she has this imaginary penalty card that she hands out to guys in her band or road crew or, you know, anyone in her orbit who, if she finds them doing something that she finds offensive as a woman, she like points it out to them and hands them this penalty card, and, you know, just as a kind of a gentle and almost humorous nudge, but also a very uncertain terms, like, reminder that they're behaving inappropriately around her.
I love when the artists talk about their first guitars or what their first instruments. Hers was her first bass guitar was a 1957 Fender Precision that she just fell in love with, and a lot of the artists had these stories of, like, how they decided to become, that's what they were going to do. I mean, that's a huge leap of faith to say, I'm going to become a rock musician. And it was great to hear her talk about her first guitar and how she gets started in music.
Yeah, in her case, you know, she came from quite a musical family. So
yeah.
It kind of made sense that she followed in their footsteps, which is how she ended up with such a phenomenal instrument. I mean, anyone who plays bass knows that a Fender Precision bass is not a cheap instrument. It's basically like the Mercedes of bass guitars. I mean, it's a really, really nice instrument. And so for someone to hand that to, I think she was 5 or 6 years old when she got that. I mean, that's... Most people, you know, they're practicing for 10 years before someone's willing to give them an instrument like that. So, you know, she kind of had an advantage in that way, that she came from a really musical family. Not everyone in this book had that kind of, you know, supportive family background.
Right.
So it was interesting to hear the various paths that people took. You know, like Gina Schock describes her childhood as being idyllic, you know, before she... goes on to be in the Go-Go's. I mean, she really seemed to have quite a smooth path in many ways. And then, you know, there's on the opposite end of the spectrum, someone like Lydia Lunch, who came from an absolutely horrific and abusive family background. So it was really interesting to hear how people's families really had such a part in either supporting them or, I think, in some cases, spurring them on to say, basically, I'll show you, you know. So it was an interesting thing to dig really deeply into these women's backgrounds.
Now, also becoming a parent and having a family, it was fascinating to read about how the different artists came to terms with that. For some of them, they ended up stopping their career for at least a couple of years and then came back to it. What did you learn about how they talked about when they started having their own family?
It was interesting because when I did these interviews, I, of course, had some questions that I asked every one of them because I wanted some kind of continuity between the chapters. For example, I asked all of them about, you know, whether they were feminists or not, whether they considered themselves to be. I asked about their childhoods. But then I left quite a bit of wiggle room for each woman to talk about what she felt was important to her in her life and in her career. And each of them kind of chose a very different thing, you know, when it came to that part. And there were a couple of them who really focused on motherhood. And you're right, you know, the experience of women in the music business is quite different than their male peers on that count. Some of them talk quite a bit about how, you know, they see how it's basically normal for a man who becomes a father to go on the road almost immediately after and be gone for a month while the wife or girlfriend raises the child. And no one bats an eye about this, but, you know, if a woman did that and left the child with someone else, like, people would be outraged.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, it's this kind of double standard. And then a lot of the women pointed out that even if they could have done that, they don't want to do that, and how they manage to bring their children along or... You know, like you said, in a couple of cases, people just had to stop their career entirely for quite some time. And that's, for example, what Paula Cole did.
Yep.
She had to stop for several years because she was a single parent and she just couldn't juggle both. I mean, there was no way to do it. So she had to stop for quite some time.
Let's talk about Ann Wilson of Heart in the band with her sister, Nancy. She had a hard time initially getting any kind of record deal because people thought they were in like a novelty act or something.
Yeah, there's a few stories of the woman at the beginning of the book, like Ann Wilson, and also the Go-Go's following them, where record companies just simply weren't willing to take a chance on a band that had women very prominently in them because you know, a woman-led band really hadn't succeeded like that before. I mean, yes, there were examples like Janis Joplin and, you know, Grace Slick and people like that. But, you know, for a band to come forward and say, like, we are all female, or, you know, we are two sisters leading a band and the rest are guys, but we're the definite leaders, this kind of thing had not been done before. And so record companies just weren't willing to take that kind of risk because they didn't think it would be commercially viable.
One of the things I also noticed is how many of the artists had extremely strong feelings about losing abortion rights.
Yes. This just happened to be these interviews just happened to be when Roe versus Wade being overturned. And I didn't, that's another thing that I hadn't brought up. I was kind of curious to see if anyone would.
Well, they were very vocal about it.
Yes. The ones that brought it up were very, they felt very strongly about it. So that was really interesting. As a journalist, I will say that I wish I could have found somebody who was at the other end of the spectrum to offer a differing point of view, just because, you know, I really do think that it's important to, like, have a balance.
But maybe there just isn't a balance. I mean,
yeah, the reality is that the music business is very, it does tend to be very left-leaning. It does tend to be very liberal. So that's why the take on that particular topic is the way it is in this book. It wasn't because I deliberately chose to highlight it that way. That's just the way that it went, because that's the way people felt when I talked to them about it. So it was interesting, because as I went through this book, you know, there were a couple of topics where people did really sharply disagree with each other, though.
Yeah.
That wasn't one of them, but, you know, there were a couple of other points where somebody would say something like, I think this, and I can't believe anyone else would think any differently. And then, you know, two chapters later, someone would say the opposite and say, well, I can't believe anyone wouldn't think this way. And so I'm a little bit curious to know how these women feel as they're reading each other's chapters, because some of them wanted to read other people's stuff. And I said, you know, I'm not letting anybody know what anyone else said. I don't want anybody influencing anybody else. But I think it might be interesting to talk to some of these women again and hear what they think now that they'll have a chance to read what the others said.
Exene Cervenka of the band,
yeah,
of the band X, and also she's done independent stuff too. She resisted the feminist label. Now, I've interviewed Exene twice. Once,
Exene's quite a force of nature.
I was just going to say that. I interviewed her once as one of the band members of X, as the front person for X, but I also interviewed her as a visual artist. She published a book of her collages, and I interviewed her on that. And she was, you're right, a force of nature, I guess, is the best way to describe it. But that brought up an interesting thing about how many of these rock musicians are also doing other creative enterprises. In other words, they either direct a film or they do some kind of visual art or poetry and stuff like that. That's true for a lot of them. One of the artists does chainsaw art.
Yeah, Shriekery of the Runaways.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. I had to look up what that was, and it is exactly what it sounds like. He uses a chainsaw to carve large wooden figures. And if you look it up online, I mean, they're actually astonishingly beautiful. It's actually really impressive if you look it up. I mean, I don't know what I was expecting, but when I looked up her website and saw what she was doing, it's really quite impressive.
She was an interesting interview, and she also brought up that the band had real the Runaways had a real problem with the band Rush.
Yeah, that was a painful story for me to include, because I am a massive Rush fan. This is one of those ones where I had to really, there were a couple of times like this where someone said something that I personally take issue with. And I had, those are the times when I really had to remind myself of my formal journalism training. You know, it's not my job to impose my own opinion on these things. It's my job to,
But wait a minute, it was an actual incident. So it wasn't just an opinion. They actually
but they might have a very different recollection of this.
Oh, my God. You're such a journalist. Well, I'm also fascinated.
It's my job to be the conduit, not to impose my own.
Your musical tastes.
Yeah, so I had to include, because it is a very, it's a good story in that it illustrates you know, basically the gist of the story is the Runaways were opening for Rush, and Rush treated them with a very high degree of disrespect in that escalated to a point where it could have actually become physically dangerous for the Runaways. So, I had a hard time hearing that story, but, you know, it's almost 50 years after this happened, and she still sounded very upset as she told that story. I mean, it obviously still rankled with her. And there were a couple of instances like that where people would start telling me a story and I could tell, you know, from their body language, or, you know, their voices would start shaking, or, you know, something would indicate to me like this is still something that really gets them really emotionally worked up. So, you know, I tend to believe that she's telling the truth in this story.
We're almost out of time. I have another 3 or 4 pages of questions, but I just want to pay special attention. There's some great interviews about the Riot Girl movement, especially Toby Vail of Bikini Kill.
Right.
I thought that stuff was great. I was amazed to read that they were influenced by the Go-Go's.
There were a few instances like that in the book where somebody would say they were influenced by someone else in the book. And I, that's not something that I instigated. And so I think it's going to be cool when they read the book and see that someone that they mentioned, or someone mentioned them, you know, I think it's a good thing.
I also learned about where Smells Like Teen Spirit came from, which was don't talk about it, make people buy the book. And also, I thought one of your most interesting choices was Amanda Palmer. Who was one of the people that founded the Dresden Dolls.
Yes, and in fact, Amanda and I are going to be doing an event together in May to help promote this book in Woodstock. She has her own venue called Graveside Variety. And on Saturday, May 18th, if I may plug, we're going to do an event during the day where we're going to be in discussion and just talking about this book. Amanda's really great. Amanda is one of the people that I had on my wish list big time because
she's cool.
Knew she'd be so outspoken about so many different
things. Oh, yeah.
So fearless.
But she's also interesting because she's a performance artist. She does so many things. We're completely out of time. Tonight, we've been talking with writer and journalist Catherine Yeske Taylor, and we've been talking about her new book. As you can tell, there's a lot to talk about. She's a badass woman in rock shaping feminism. Catherine, it's been a real pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.